Here are the stories we're covering this week in the Category5.tv newsroom. Scanning of random reports and the use of encrypted malware by online criminals is on the rise, according to a threat report by Sonic Wall. A semi-autonomous robot designed to operate in hostile environments has been developed by NASA, and word is that it could be used to help build a base on Mars. ESET researchers discovered a new Android ransomware family that attempts to spread to victims' contacts and deploys some unusual tricks. And Linus Torvalds, the creator of Linux, is killing off support for legacy disk drive tech. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Category5.tv newsroom, covering the week's top tech stories with a slight Linux bias.
I'm Jeff Weston, and here are the top stories we're following this week. Scanning of random ports and the use of encrypted malware by online criminals is on the rise, according to a threat report by Sonic Wall. Based on Sonic Wall's sampling of what it says were 700 million such intrusions by the end of 2018, around 20% of all malware attacks were coming through non-standard ports, a sum of which had decreased by 13% compared to 2018. The company explained that non-standard meant ports which are not in routine use by other programs, such as ports 80 and 443 for one's web browser. SonicWall Chief Executive Bill Connor says those in charge of malware deployments are certainly cognizant of this blind spot and continue to actively exploit it. Organizations aren't prepared for protecting this attack vector with the same diligence as standard ports. Encrypted malware was something else that SonicWall said was on the rise. Increasing by a quarter compared to the preceding 12 months, in 2018, the company said that it had logged more than 2.8 million encrypted malware attacks, a 27% jump over the previous year. A variety of factors contributed to this trend in SonicWall's view. Ransomware as a service, that's RaaS, open source malware kits, and cryptocurrencies bounced back up. This is what the firm said, with ransomware continuing to be a successful moneymaker for criminals that are deploying it. Connor says, I'm certain that a number of high-profile ransomware cases involving major U.S. cities also signaled that there are still large vulnerable targets out there, despite ransomware being a headline for the past 4 to 5 years.
Not to point any fingers or anything, but you know, we'll just say some high-profile cities in the United States that maybe have been attacked by ransomware.
So what shocks me kind of about this is that after this length of time, we're going, oh, there's other ports we should be looking at? To me, that's common sense.
Yeah.
I use CSF LFD on my servers, and it watches for port scans and blocks the IP address if someone tries one.
Right. Mm.
But it's absolutely secure. It shows that security through obscurity is not security at all.
Of course.
Because some people will do this where, oh yeah, I need remote desktop, so I just won't use 3389. I'll use 3392. Nobody will ever guess that. Or whatever, right? But a port scan actually looks incrementally at all the ports, and most likely you're not blocking those port scans. And if that's the case, and they find that 3392 as opposed to 3389, and they see that that's the RDP protocol that's running, well...
Not good.
Yeah. If I just said a whole bunch of things that make absolutely no sense, just know that this is a serious issue.
But that's what kind of bothers me is, like... That is not common thinking for me, but at the same time, I think of that and go, you need to be monitoring all the ports. Mm-hmm. Why would security professionals not be thinking that way from the get-go?
There's two approaches. One is to monitor all the ports, yes, but the second is just to lock down by default. Mm-hmm. 100% all ports are closed.
Unless you open them.
Unless you specifically open the ports.
Tried doing that at home, became a bit of a pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm. But then still, if a port scan takes place, what action is being taken?
Mm-hmm. Like, is there a way to hide your ports, though? So then they don't respond saying, oh, this port is open, this port is closed.
That's a good point.
If they are open, they will presumably respond.
But is there a way to, like, hide yourself besides unplugging your computer?
Kind of like a port cloaking device.
Yeah, it's like
the best way is to have a proper firewall in place that uses login failure daemon or something like that so that, port 22 is open, but if they guess the wrong password three times, lock their IP address out of my network.
Right.
Right? Because if I'm SSHing to my server, I know my password, I know my key. So if you're not using something like LFD, login failure daemon, mm-hmm. you have no protection against somebody brute forcing over and over once they find that
port.
Trying
to get in. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's exactly why ransomware is a thing, because they're finding remote desktop protocol enabled on networks and they're able to get in. And then someone says, well, I had antivirus. Yeah, but they remoted in to the computer and guess what? They turned off the danged antivirus. It's what do you think they're going to do?
It's amazing how many people still think that antivirus protects them from everything.
It doesn't. There is no disclaimer that says it will protect you from allowing somebody else access to your network. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you're doing if you turn on things like RDP, regardless of whether you use obscure ports or not. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing, so to just kind of circle back and say, okay, looking at the story, what we're seeing, SonicWall themselves, the firewall company, mm-hmm. have noted that non-standard port attacks are on the rise.
That's right.
So okay. That means port scans are happening, and if you're not protecting yourself with LFD or some other type of login failure denial firewall, mm-hmm. then you are susceptible to those attacks because the ports are going to be open because you need the services, right?
Totally.
That's right.
Yeah.
Man, oh man.
Simple yet so complex.
Yeah. Yes.
A semi-autonomous robot designed to operate in hostile environments has been developed by NASA, and word has it that it could be used to help build a base on Mars. A 6-foot, 2-inch semi-autonomous humanoid robot, Valkyrie, was designed with the ultimate goal by NASA, to help humans colonize Mars. The 300-pound robot has been prepped with a number of space-based trials by NASA's Space Robotics Challenge. The robot can use human tools and map its own path safely. It can navigate well across rocky terrain thanks to its hydraulic power. And at first sight, the Valkyrie is an Iron Man look-alike with a glowing circle in its chest marking the robot's status. Inside the infrared transparent faceplate, you will find a whirring LiDAR sensor that constantly scans the surroundings for objects and obstacles. The robot has dual brains, two Intel Core i7 computers, which translate the sensor's input. Although Valkyrie has tested with a power cord in place, it can run on a battery pack lasting an hour. There will be a host of cameras and sensors around Valkyrie, a multi-sense LS camera on its head, which combines laser, 3D stereo, and video, as well as an extra hazard camera looking ahead and behind from the torso. 38 sensors on each three-fingered hand will maintain dexterity and control. So basically, if you've ever watched the movie The Martian, Valkyrie will pretty much recreate its plot, minus the part about growing potatoes. It's an interesting story. But really, Iron Man?
Like, yes.
Like, it's got the logo right on the chest,
that's the
illuminated.
One thing in the story that I'm like, you just ruined it. You just ruined it.
But it's actually kind of cool looking.
It is cool looking.
I'm surprised, though, that it's i7.
Yeah. Is that just because it's been in development for a little bit?
That's my guess.
Well, I mean,
you don't need i9. For what it does. But
no, but what my point is, and Ameridroid is saying, well, that's going to kill the battery life. Because, you've got the hyper-threading, and it uses a lot of power, right? That's why an i3 notebook and an i5 will last a lot longer on battery than an i7.
Correct.
Right? Because mm-hmm. the i7 is just bleeding the battery dry. But my thought is, it's surprising that they're creating an autonomous robot that is not utilizing some of the more modern AI technology.
Yep.
Like, I'm talking like neural technology.
Well, it's still new, right? So that's just another thing that can go wrong.
Do you think that as developers, like all of these new nano processors have come out and they're like, oh, we built this thing on an on dual i7s. It's got a motherboard about this big and two honking heat sinks.
Well, I want to see what they do with that stuff then. Like, if this is just using i7s, imagine what they can do with that technology.
Yeah, but if they're building it for CPU instead of NPU, then it's the wrong architecture. Right?
They tried.
I'm just surprised that there wasn't any reference to solar panels. Like, the fact that it can only run on a battery for an hour, like, if you're going to go to Mars, put a solar panel. It's not like there's...
They must have.
They're not,
or it's
going to
have a charging
though,
station, right?
Because...
That's true.
Farther from the sun, and dust and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, if you have like a central hub they can go to and charge and then like do their thing.
That's what I wonder, is having a massive hub where they charge.
So like when it's done,
so it works
it's
as
like
the
scanning the area, it goes back like a Roomba vacuum. Like
exactly. But by doing it that way, they can have a much larger base for the batteries for the charging station, and it can be lighter weight. It can be more mobile and more able
to
articulate.
Well, it was only 3 inches wide.
What was
the robot? It said something about like 6 feet and then 3 inches. I thought
no.
3 inches?
What was I reading at the beginning?
What are we looking at?
Stick. It's just a stick.
I was just reading.
What use is that, Jeff? It just falls over.
I'm going to have to go back to the beginning of the story because I'm positive I read 3 inches.
Oh, gosh.
That's cool, though. It's an exciting time we live in, but like they can use that on the moon and stuff, too. So, space station.
There you go. Yeah. You know? We got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Baby steps to Mars.
Let Wally get us ready. Then we can go after him.
Wally! All right. ESET researchers discovered a new Android ransomware family that attempts to spread to victims' contacts and deploys some unusual tricks. After 2 years of decline in Android ransomware, a new family has emerged. We've seen the ransomware detected by ESET Mobile Security as Android file code distributed via various online forums. Using victims' contact lists, it spreads further via SMS with malicious links. Due to narrow targeting and flaws in both execution of the campaign and implementation of its encryption, the impact of this new ransomware is limited. However, if the developers fix the flaws and the operators start targeting broader groups of users, the Android file code ransomware could become a serious threat. Android file code has been active since at least July 12, 2019. Within the campaign, ESET discovered Android file code has been distributed via malicious posts on Reddit and the XDA Developers Forum, a forum for Android developers. The malicious activity was reported to XDA developers and Reddit. The posts on the XDA Developers Forum were removed swiftly. The malicious Reddit profile remained online. Android file code spreads further via SMS with malicious links, which are sent to all contacts in the victim's contact list. After the ransomware sends out a batch of malicious SMSs, it encrypts most user files on the device and requests a ransom. Due to flawed encryption, it is possible to decrypt the affected files without any assistance from the attacker. In one link that was shared on Reddit, the attackers used the URL shortener bit.ly. This bit.ly URL was created on June 11th, 2019. Once potential victims receive an SMS message with the link to the malicious application, they need to install it manually. After the app is launched, it displays whatever is promised in the post distributing it. Most often, it's a sex simulator online game. However, its main purposes are command and control communication, spreading malicious messages, and implementing the encryption-decryption mechanism. Hmm. Why SMS?
Well, and this is what I'm thinking immediately, is it just goes to show that you cannot trust that just because it's coming from my friend, that it can be trusted. Mm-hmm. Like, if you suddenly got an SMS, like if I got one from you, and it said, hey, Robbie, click this link, and it was legitimately from your phone number, because it's your phone that's infected, it automatically creates a level of trust for me.
I never trust a link that comes in through tech.
Not even the
But I'm talking, it comes from your phone number.
Yeah.
More than just someone you know. It's from your phone number.
I know, so like every time I get a link through a text, I always respond back going, is this legit? Did you send it to me? What does it do?
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah.
What's with this sex game you sent me?
What is this?
Exactly. But yeah, like... I mean, I guess that makes sense. I mean, by SMS, it seems a little bit more personal.
Sure.
Rather than, like, the Prince of Persia wants to give you $1 million.
Really?
But
sorry.
But also, there's this fact that, like, I don't give my cell phone number to anyone.
I don't even have your cell phone
number. You may have, though, but some of my...
No, I'm either.
Maybe you need to join the close circle, Jeff. But so if I got an SMS...
I'm on the layer down. I'm not in that circle.
No, but think... You've never had a need to contact me on my smartphone.
That's true.
Because we're so connected on, like, Discord and everything
that's
else.
True.
So, but if that was not the case, if it was somebody... So for someone like me, who has so few people that I'm in communication with on my smartphone...
Yeah.
Right.
What if it came from one of them? Mm-hmm. So, like...
That's fair.
It's not like a bulk mail. It's like, that's from one of the 10 people who have my smartphone number, and it's their number, and it shows on my phone as from them.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, I have that level of trust. So we really have to be careful.
They're getting smarter.
And this could lead to new types of phishing scams.
Yeah.
I mean, ransomware is one thing. So this is something that you have to install.
Mm-hmm.
But what if it was a link to a website that was a phishing scam? I've seen them where it's an Instagram. Instagram is so stupid with their way that they've created their service because you have to log in order to see the photos.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So because of that, that's stupid.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Because of that, a phishing scam could easily trick me into thinking I'm opening Instagram and I need to log in order to access the photo that's being sent to me.
Yes. And then at the same time, it steals your login information.
Exactly. Yep. That's how phishing scams work. So that's something that didn't need to be installed. It's something that would have just shown up on my SMS messages from somebody that I trust.
How many times do you see that where it's like, oh, you got to reset your password on your bank account?
Sure.
And
people do fall for that.
That
seems like that's something a little harder to fall for.
Right.
The Instagram example is very easy for someone to fall for.
Oh, totally.
So, you know.
Moral of the story, no downloading simulated sex games.
Oh, just stay away from them, folks.
Yep.
Just stay away.
All right. Linus Torvalds, the creator of Linux, is killing off support for legacy disk drive tech. Say goodbye to your save button. Floppy disks appeared in the 1970s, first as giant 8-inch disks, before slimming down to the 5.25-inch variety seen attached to many PCs and home computers of the 1980s. The 1980s also marked the beginning of the end of the traditional floppy, with the considerably stiffer 3.5-inch version from Sony, which dumped the flexible sleeve protecting the magnetic media with something much more rigid with a metal covering that could be slid aside when inserted into the drive's mechanism. The 1998's iMac courageously did not feature a floppy drive, and within the decade, the vast majority of PC makers had followed suit as CD, DVD, and USB storage became more prevalent. Much of the world has known the floppy was dead for some time, but Torvalds has made it official with a Linux kernel merge marking the floppy driver as orphaned. The issue is that there were plenty of USB drives out there. Actual PC hardware is becoming a thing of the past, thanks to motherboard makers ditching the relevant connectors and because very few people use floppy disks anymore. Torvalds observed that actual working physical floppy hardware is getting hard to find and considered the driver dead, with a few faint use cases still present in emulated environments. But if you really need to read those old disks, USB is going to be the way forward. Naturally, just being orphaned doesn't mean that the driver is actually disappearing immediately, but it does mean that unless some magic or magnetic media meddler steps up to maintain it, the odds are it will be depreciated and eventually removed.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like at this point, so I got my laptop and it has no optical drive.
Yeah.
And so it's the same.
Things change.
Yeah, but it's the same kind of scenario where, so I actually went out and for $20 I bought a USB optical drive.
Mm. There you go.
Yeah, there's no need for an SATA optical driver anymore because it's USB.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's all universal serial bus. Well, same thing with a floppy disk. If you still use them, it's going to be an external USB. And thinking back to the old ThinkPad days, like years ago, like in the 90s, like where the flash drive, not the flash drive, pardon me, the floppy drive became an external unit that plugged into USB.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that was an upgrade component that you could buy to make your laptop backward compatible to those early disks.
Mm-hmm.
I still have a floppy of Commander Keen.
Yeah?
Amazing.
I have Star Trek shareware disks.
Oh, nice.
Which is kind of neat. I use them as coasters and stuff like that.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Well, I was cleaning out a box of old disks, and one of my kids saw it, and he goes, "Hey, that looks like the save button."
Yes.
Like,
yep.
I wonder why.
It does. Let me tell you why. And so I explained it.
Sit down and dive into
it.
When I was your age.
Exactly.
Well, this is so weird because
I stored 1.44 megabytes. Dad, what's a megabyte?
Well, here's the thing. I just turned 25, and the thing is that, like, back in high school when I was in grade 9, our computers still had floppy disks.
Yep.
Like, in the sense that I was like, yeah, I could put it in and take it out and stuff.
All right.
And literally, our going through high school, we had until grade 10 and 11. All, like, the grade 9s coming in and stuff. What is this for? Like, it's a weird rectangle. Like, my CD doesn't fit in it. What is it for? I'm like...
Well, and the early USB flash drives were, what, 8 gigs? So
I think I had a 2.
A 2 gig? But when you put that into the perspective of 1.44 megabytes, or dual density was 2.88. So 2.88 megabytes.
It's like a photo.
And a 2 gigabyte is 2,000, essentially 2,048.
Yeah.
2,048
megabytes. That's a lot of floppies.
That's a whole lot of floppies. But I do remember installing programs. It's like
Windows 3.1.
Disk 2. Yes. Disk 3.
You thought the Windows XP installer was horrible?
Even with CDs before DVDs, right? Yeah. It's just like CD 1, CD 2, CD 3.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. You don't even know, dude.
I know.
You don't even know until you tried to install an operating system from 1.44 meg floppies.
And
then you got to disk 16 and it was corrupt.
Yeah.
And you had to order disk 16 and make sure that the power didn't go out to the computer because you didn't want to have to start over. Those were the days.
I do remember
it's the end.
Stuff like that. I think our first computer had the 5 1/4. I don't remember the 8-inch.
My first computer had an audio cassette deck that
really
stored the data magnetically.
That's awesome.
So you used just normal cassettes, which are like a reel-to-reel tape kit.
Yeah.
That's how it worked, Jeff.
Walk down memory lane.
Yeah. All right. This is actually me. I've got to take a look at the cryptocurrency report. Let's see what we got here. Okay. So in CoinGecko this week, Bitcoin is up. $10,037.10 U.S. is the current value, gaining $232 this week.
Well done.
Facebook Libra is still not trading.
Good.
Litecoin is at $98.79 U.S., gaining $3.93 this week. Ethereum is at $215.48, losing just a little bit. Monero is staying fairly static at $80.04 U.S. Torque is actually starting to see some gains. We're at 1/10,000th of a cent. That's the highest I've ever seen it.
Wow.
For a single Torque coin. So these being the very, very small coins. So
the
you can have lots of them.
Right?
Stellite, yeah.
Okay,
that's right. Turtle coin is still slow and steady at 0.84/10,000th of a cent, losing 0.04. Yeah, just keep waiting, dude. We're
going
to be on Mars before Turtle coin goes to the moon. I'll tell you what.
Right. One day.
Don't forget, if you are going to play around with cryptocurrency, make sure you only do as much as you can afford to lose. The cryptocurrency market never closes and is always volatile.
Good text.
That's it for the cryptocurrency report, Jeff.
Excellent. Big thanks to Roy W. Nash and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us this week. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And for more free content, be sure to check out our website. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Jeff Weston, filling in for Sasha Rickman.
Sasha
Rickman.
And I'm Robbie Ferguson.
And I'm still Henry Bailey Brown.
Good.